So this is working with DBAs in a DevOps world. First, a little bit about me. As the wonderful Alice just said, my name is Sylvia Botros. You might know me on Twitter as DB Smasher. I've been working with a company called SendGrid for nearly 6 years now, and I accidentally became a DBA. I started off right out of college in a now mostly unknown, long-forgotten CDN in New York City. When I first started there, I was put in charge of a Django set of code. It was part UI, part backend code, part the in-house on-call system, which was interesting. At some point, the code that talked to the database for the billing aggregation started taking slower and slower and slower, and there was nobody in charge of the database. They just thought it would work. And next thing you know, since I was the one who owned the code, I had to go figure out what's wrong with the database. 2 days later, I'm swimming in MySQL documentation, and the rest, as they know, as you all know, is called its history. If you haven't heard of SendGrid, we are an email infrastructure provider. We basically are a middleman for companies that want to communicate with their customers through email, but don't want to have to deal with all the details of, you know, spam boxes, whitelists, blacklists, spam lists. So we do this little stuff for them. I didn't know that was a business before I joined SendGrid either, so if you want to know a little bit about what kind of scale that entails, I have some stats for you. More than 55,000 paying customers in over 100 countries so far. 1 trillion emails processed and counting. 50% of the world's unique email addresses have received email from SendGrid only within the last 12 months. These are just a few of the customers that we have. I'm sure you've used at least one, if not all of those. All of their email flows through SendGrid's architecture. But first, let's talk about DevOps. Some people will say that's, you know, is it containers? Is it configuration management? That went on for a while. Is it orchestration? Is it the orchestration of containers? Is it even NoSQL? There's been a lot of debate over what DevOps is, but according to a very trusted source on the internet, called Wikipedia, it is defined as unifying operations and engineering under one umbrella, which really sounds like just a lot of meetings with a lot of people in the room. But, you know, of course, when they sit in the room, they're going to talk, and everything is going to be like this. There's going to be rainbows and, you know, green grass everywhere. So that's one definition for DevOps. But let me tell you a little story that I'm sure a lot of people in the room have heard before. Product comes to the engineering team. They want a new feature. Engineering listens to the requirements, and they decide this is, you know, not a small change, not a one-day task. So they decide to make some stories, because we don't like to call them tickets anymore. We like to call them stories now. They make a bunch of stories. They put them in their favorite agile bug tracker. They assign points. The really cool shops at this stage start playing poker. Some code gets written. It gets put in, you know, people on their dev laptops, they start testing things. If they're really fancy, there's some environment that maybe looks like production, sort of. The QA engineer, you know, clicks some things. Yeah, sure, it's good. We deploy, it goes to production, and profit. Or is it? This is where you find yourself in like a year or so. At first, it happens maybe once every few deploys. You know, we make a deploy and, you know, something breaks. And we're like, okay, that was a fluke. We didn't test this particular code path. It'll be fine next time. But then it starts happening more often. And next thing you know, like, your deploys are not, you know, a cause for celebration. They're a cause for fear. People are now scared to deploy things. And God forbid if your new release involves a change to the database, because nobody wants to touch that thing. It's blocking SQL. It's, you know, we were fine, but then the next day the table, you know, got really big. We don't know what's happening. So we decide to solve it. We're going to hire a DBA. We're going to get someone to own that thing. Sometimes we hire the DBA, sometimes we find the junior engineer and just shove her in front of it. That didn't happen. So we tell that person, okay, this is yours now, you need to make sure it works. You know, performance, that person starts trying to look and see, like, what's the performance metrics, what are the slow logs looking like, all those boring DBA details. Pretty soon they realize that DBA has transformed into this. The database is their red stapler. Nobody touched the red stapler. What queries are you running? No, that's too slow. You need to change that. The DBA is now, you know, going around the office literally telling people to please stop what you're doing. You, like, this query is terrible. You need to take down this feature you just deployed yesterday. I don't care if it's in your retro. How is your Narnia now? The DBA is really ruining your whole DevOps, you know, jive now. Some will be like, well, but we tested the code. The code worked. It's got to be the database. It's still the database problem. But then, you know, slow down a second. What did you test? Did you test with one user, 10 users, 100 users? How many users do you actually have in production? How much load testing did you do? How much did you change your load testing? Did you load test individual components of this thing that you just built? Or did you load test end-to-end? Did you do any load testing at all? Because I know sometimes that doesn't even happen. Do you know what's the maximum throughput your system can handle before things start going sideways? Does that number change depending on some other variation of your market fit? Did you have any presumption when you were doing these tests? Do you have only a single database? Are you still living in the lamp stack days in production? Probably not. And if you're not, are you testing outside of production with all the schemas in one host that's running local hosts and is answering in microseconds? What about, you know, your latencies? Are you making the presumption that your calls are going to come back within a certain time? Do you even know what that certain time frame is for your client calls? What if those calls to the database take twice as long, 10 times as long? What if they don't come back? What if they come back from some databases and don't come back from other databases? The scariest thing, are you actually scared of your product succeeding? If I told you right now that your new feature that you're working on, when it releases, you know, next week or whatever, it's going to make it to the top 10 posts of Hacker News. Do you get excited, or does it send a shudder down your spine? Yeah, now everybody is unhappy. The DBA is mad. His red stapler has been stolen by someone. The engineers are having a hard time deploying their features on time. When they do, they keep having to roll back because they keep having outages because the database slowed down, and now all the customers are mad. The product team is unhappy because their roadmap is not getting any shorter. People are all sad, and your DevOps Narnia is now, you know, some sort of zombie land. I know, it's sounding like a really bad story, and I know we've all been there before, but it will get better, I promise. I've seen it go from, like, the really bad days to the mostly good days, and I'm here to tell you, like, some steps that will help you, you know, wrangle that chaos a little bit. The first thing you need to do as an organization is put together a technology catalog. What that means is everybody sits down, a document gets put together where you list all the different things that you use in your stack. Every single cache layer, every single data store. We all know we don't use one anymore. Every single framework, every single PubSub. Why? Because you need to actually decide at that point, why do you use each of them? It's important to know that your customers are not paying you for building things with the coolest, latest, and greatest things out in the market. They're paying you because you should be giving them a service. And it doesn't matter how bleeding edge the stack is. If it's not providing reliability, if it's not allowing you to give them new features faster, then something has to change. So start by knowing all the things that are in your stack. And I know that as engineers, we really like to use new things. There's always this pushback of, like, no, but we can't just use MySQL. It's, like, you know, I don't know, 20 years old or something like that. old or, you know, quote-unquote boring does not mean it's not challenging. You can build large systems of scale with technology that's been around for a very long time and still do impressive engineering work with that. Just don't beat that guy. We all want to have the new shiny toy, but, you know, the business does not care. The business, they don't even know any of these things that are in there. If you start telling them, yeah, well, we're using this brand new data store, and so when these things happen or when traffic hits that threshold, you know, things start breaking. They just want predictability. They want to be able to say, these are our customers, these are our uptime numbers, and that translates into these certain predictions that we have to make as a business. Now, when I say put together a technology catalog, I am not suggesting that you have to use the one thing for everything. Like, I'm not saying everything has to be in MySQL. Just make sure you know why you're making a change. There needs to be also orthogonal to the technology catalog, a process of why, of when you need to add something new to your stack, and a vetting process of like why you're doing that. So you're building this new feature, you know it's something that maybe will not perform as well in MySQL, so your company doesn't have never used, say, Cassandra before, but you know it's something that needs, you know, buckets or needs like a way to tombstone things. What do? You need to have a process that will explain and basically sell to the rest of your org why you need to introduce this new thing to the stack. And most importantly, when you do this, as your company grows, you have to be very aware that the cost of adding new things to your stack is not only the cost of writing code. There's tooling. There's metrics. There's observability, which Amy talked about earlier. Like, does that thing that you're adding, you know, bring the metrics that your observability stack can actually understand? Do you have people who understand how to run this thing, or is one person going to be on call for it 24/7? So there's things to consider when you're thinking about, you know, adding a new tool to your stack as a growing company. Do you self-host? Are you in multiple data centers? Does this new thing have an easy way to handle multiple data centers? Even if in your cloud, if you're in multiple availability zones, does this new thing, can this thing talk across those boundaries, or do you have to build your own way to get your data across in multiple places? What kind of data is going to go in this thing? The context of what you're building can strongly drive how conservative or up or, you know, ambitious you can be with the stack that you're building. Draw a line between this data and your monthly invoices. If what you're doing is, say, a new billing system because the old system that has the stats for billing is too slow and the queries take too long, and you're like, now we need to restructure how we store our billing data, you can't go tell finance, well, we're going to use this latest Mongo release, but it's going to be available all the time. It has multiple writers, but if there's a network partition, it's going to lose like 30% according to the last Jepsen's test that was run. And so sometimes your billing data is going to be 30% off. And God help you if you don't even know, God help you if you don't even know, you know, how often do you get network partitions? Like, if that's not even a thing that you know, then you're not even going to be able to tell whether this new thing you want to introduce has the right thresholds for, like, for your tolerance for error or no. And most importantly, you have to really make the case of what I already use cannot be used for this use case. The barrier of entry for new tools in your stack needs to get higher the bigger your scale becomes. This is an important thing to remember. We never set out to build complex systems. They start off as a simple system that worked. We just needed to make some changes, and next thing you know, it become a complex system. I mean, who builds simple systems anymore? I don't think I've met anybody in the last few years who builds basically on a simple LAMP stack. And nobody say Etsy, they're not really simple LAMP stack anymore. So what you're trying to achieve here is not to eliminate chaos, not to eliminate sprawl. You will find yourself, as your feature set develops and as your scale increases, that you will have to, you know, possibly use multiple data stores. You'll need at least one relational one and one NoSQL one. But you got to know why you're using each one of them. What you're trying to do is to control the chaos. The goal here is to make a system only as complex as it needs to be, not a single bit more. Now, we still haven't written a single line of code for this new feature we're trying to do for our product team. Before you do that, you got to write things down. You start a document, and you write in it in grueling detail not just what you're going to build, but why you're going to build it. How does your solution solve the problem? So you have to start with a problem statement, and you have to explain this design that you're about to build for this new feature that customers are asking for. And then you have to explain all the limitations and the compromises. The blueprint document pretends that this solution is perfect for everybody who has this problem in your architecture, then something is missing. Remember, at this point, your stakeholders are not just the product team. At this point, you're starting to build things, and there's more stakeholders than just the customers asking for it. Is it ops? Is this new feature going to involve a lot of storage? If you self-host, does it involve, you know, advanced notice for hardware procurement? Even if you're in the cloud, does it mean a significant increase to your Amazon bill? Does your finance team need to know about that? What's the InfoSec implications? Like, what kind of data is going to be in there? Is it going to involve any data that would be considered PII in, like, Europe? If you build that thing now and you start acquiring customers in the Eurozone, is that going to be a problem? The security team is going to need to know this stuff in advance and, you know, try to, as much as possible, plan ahead. Again, finance. Does this new feature represent a new and distinct revenue stream? Do they need to know that they now have to add this to their forecasts and keep track of it? Your ETL team, is this a new feature that might impact your customer lifecycle? Do they possibly need to know that we need to track this new feature? How often customers, you know, sign up for it? How often do they stay on it? And the rule is, and this is a rule for a lot of things and not just, you know, architecture design, people make presumptions. If the details are not there, they might not actually ask for them. They will possibly make presumptions. And presumptions are how expectations misalign and how everybody gets sad down the line. So what you need to do is not just to write down that design doc, but you also need to find a way to make sure everybody who might care about this actually see this. You send them an email, right? Nobody checks email anymore, and I'm saying that as an email vendor. It's really hard to rely on that. So what you need to do next, after you put together the design doc as an engineering team who's going to build this feature, is have an architecture review. Now, architecture reviews are cross-functional, and cross-functional is going to be a word I'm going to use a lot now. It's basically an exercise where a group of people get in a room and start looking at that design document and start, you know, poking at it and trying to understand what's going on here. And by cross-functional, I really mean that. That definition earlier about DevOps being specifically operations and engineering is actually just the beginning. It needs to be more than just that. So who needs to be in the architecture review? Those who are building the thing, maybe not the entire engineering team, but say like the senior members of that team, the people who came up with the solution for this, for how to build this new feature. They need to be there because they're the ones who are making the case for that thing they want to build. Those who are looking to learn. Architecture reviews are a great way to grow engineers. They sit there and watch the senior engineers and maybe the other parts of the business that they're not very familiar with. You know, how does finance look at this problem? How does product look at this problem? How does the senior engineer answer the questions when they say, hey, that part of that design doesn't cover the revenue stream that we have in mind? Those who care, the stakeholder list that I had in the previous slide, that's a good spot there. you start in, depending on the implications of what you're building, you may need to specifically invite someone from InfoSec to be in your in this architecture review. You may need to invite someone from ETL because they'll need to start thinking about the implications of this new feature on their ETL pipeline. The most important thing to remember in architecture review, it is not a smackdown. You are not there to prove you are right. We are all here in this room for one purpose alone, and that is provide value for the business and to provide a feature that will actually work once you give it to the customers and not turn into a snowball that melts in their hands as soon as they get their hands on it. This is a quote by Charity Majors, and I think it's very important. We start to shave in the last few years at specialization because we feel that, you know, well, we don't even need DBAs because we can just build this thing and, you know, Amazon has the tooling. Here's the trick. This is where the specialization is an asset and not a hindrance. It's not a problem. You want those people in the room not because they have magical powers, but because they've seen things before. And you bring all of that experience together from all different parts of the business into the room to bring value to the business and bring stability to the features you're building, not to silo everybody off in their own corner with only the stuff they care about in front of them. So at this point, you start writing the code. The architecture review happened. Everybody seemed, you know, reasonably happy with the solution in mind. The limitations and the compromises that are being made are out in the open. Everybody is aware of them. And the engineering team starts writing code. We can deploy now, right? Presumptions that were made, we're pretty sure we're good. Like, we think this is going to work in production. No. After you write all the code, you still need to fire drill. Now, these things are not required for every single new feature, but this is where case by case kind of comes into play, where you need to know, like, if this is a brand new product and it's not something that is part of the core business, it's new to the company, you might want to do all the steps because you want to be careful, because at this point you have an existing customer base that's going to care whether the new thing you built is as good as the last thing you built. So you do fire drills where you write down expectations. You say, if I take out service X, I expect these parts to degrade, but these other parts to be fine. As many people as possible also collaborate on this from the technical side of the business, where, you know, the DBA look in, tell you, okay, if you take down the database, it's going to take this much time to come back, so you better be prepared that there's going to be 20-minute downtime at this point. You have the network engineers, if you are self-hosted, actually look at this. You have the other engineering teams, other services that might depend on this new thing you're building, be aware of what this fire drill is going to expect to happen. And it's documented. Everything needs to be written down. One of the biggest pitfalls in this process is design by water cooler. And published. And the important thing is to document the before and the after. So you document that, you schedule some time. Now, a smaller group of people who are more familiar with the parts of that new stack that you just built, sit down and actually start taking down services. You start kill-nining things that were planned in advance to see what happens. Many times I've sat through these, and even as the DBA, the expectations that I had of exactly what's going to complain when we take out certain parts don't exactly play out the same. And doesn't it feel great at that point that you found that out today, not the day after the feature release? The next thing you have to worry about is tech debt, and it sort of flows out of this last process. Shout out to Mark. This is one of my favorite tweets ever. Now, tech debt is a thing is you can't eliminate. Any company that is growing at a healthy pace and has to do features, they will have to take certain shortcuts. The big difference here is that there needs to be a conscious understanding of the difference between an acceptable risk and accepting an unknown risk. You can't just, you know, I'm just going to do this with a bash script and then forget about it. This new feature, yeah, it's basically like some telnet to a host somewhere, and, you know, it's running in a screen and nobody has any idea where it logs to, No, it doesn't log at all, actually. So the important thing about SecDebt is you have to be deliberate when you incur it. And it needs to be explicitly called out in your design blueprint. And when you find out more things during the fire drill, to explicitly also call it out in like the team's backlog at least. It doesn't always have to mean you're going to slow things down, because you got to deliver features. And like I said, your business wants predictability, and that has to translate into delivery dates sometimes. But the important thing is that it's not an Easter egg that's only in someone's head, and after they leave the company, someone trips on it later. That's the kind of tech debt that's going to really destroy your plans down the line. And the important thing to know is that tech debt is not just in code. The worst tech debt I've ever seen has been in databases. They are like the rug to your tech debt fairy dust. Because, a lot of companies will say, well, we don't trust NoSQL databases. Say like this, they're new-ish. We don't want to use that. We want to use MySQL. It's known. But this particular part of the feature set, the user settings, for example, well, we don't want to have to do a schema migration every time someone wants to make a change. So we're just going to stick that in a JSON blob. Just shove that in there. All right. You were fine when it was like 50 customers. Fast forward a few years, you're now, this particular part of the feature set is really popular with your customers. They really like customizing things according to their own needs and whims. Now you have, I don't know, a few billion rows like those. Each of them has its own little JSON blob sitting next to it. Now everything else that is built on top of that part of the database has screeched to a halt. Because, now every query you're doing is sifting through a JSON blob of like, I don't know, a few megs. That's what happens. So on the outside, you succeeded. You have a lot of users. But man, your database is in a sad, sad place, because you didn't decide, like, okay, we'll do this the easy way and then maybe do it, maybe, fix it down the line. And there's only so much you can do by adding an index, because, these are not for free. And it starts feeling like you're changing the wheels at 100 miles an hour. Now, you can say that, hey, but we're in the cloud. All we have to do is, get a bigger instance. We don't even have to buy the hardware. It's all on Amazon. You can outsource the tasks. You can outsource even the parts of the tooling that control the database. But you can't outsource caring. Nobody's going to do that for you. And this is where you need everybody in the company to understand these things. Product managers are not for just new features. A very healthy organization that's growing at a healthy pace will have a product manager who is also in charge of parts with tech debt. They become aware, their engineers will tell them, these particular parts have this many quarters left or that much growth left before they have to be redone. And this is where honest communication becomes super important, because if the engineers are not telling the product managers, the roadmap meetings are being done outside of the engineering organization. Next thing you know, hey, we don't really have time to fix things. We just are being asked to build new things all the time. And, everybody's unhappy because nobody's actually, instead of saying everybody is, involved in the stability of the product, nobody really is, because we're not telling people. Now remember, stability is a feature. So you must make sure that your product managers understand that stability is not a sideshow. And it takes a full company to do it. Finally, this is important to know. I started this off as working with DBAs. It doesn't matter whether you have a DBA or not, you need to do all these things. Because guess what? If it's not owned by anybody, it's owned by everybody. And next thing you know, you're going to be the next accidental DBA. And that's all. Thank you.